Good morning, Izaz.
Good morning, Michael.
Landlord and tenant. Who is liable if a tenant has problems with the property?
So depends on the nature of the problems, but it would ordinarily be the landlord if it's stuff supplied by the landlord. So the main fabric of the building, the boiler, and the likes would be the plumbing, the heating, everything would sort of come down to the landlord to ensure that everything's working and functioning properly.
And that would be contained in an agreement that I as a tenant enter into an agreement with a landlord, and you'd have a legal document to reflect that.
Correct, yeah. So it would ordinarily be in a tenancy agreement, or could even be in a license agreement if it was just landlord living in the same building.
And for a week, month, 6 months, 10 years, how does it work? In what type of structure do you get it?
So if essentially the shortest period is on an assured shorthold tenancy, 6 months, for which you'd have security of tenure over that period. And then at the end of that period, you would either sit down with the landlord and renew the term. But if you didn't renew the term and you just continued with paying rent and landlord accepting that rent and you continuing occupation of the room or the property itself, it would then become a statutory periodic tenancy. And the same terms that applied in the 6 month period beforehand would continue on that basis, but it'll be a monthly reoccurring tenancy, so to speak.
And one thing that keeps cropping up on my timeline is the issue over, you have a dispute, either party has a dispute with each other, and you decide to move out, or the tenancy comes to an end and by mutual consent. And you got this thorny aspect of a deposit. Not a lot of money, but usually say it's £1,000. Usually a month's rent, isn't it? And then what I've noticed, it being introduced over the past 5 or 6 years, is that landlords, usually via managing agent, introduce another third party to come down and inspect the property with no knowledge of the property, and they just look at it, and it seems to be a way of reducing your deposit because they'll find fault.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of fault, who's liable? Because obviously there's going to be a bit of wear and tear if you've been there for 6 months, 12 months, and it'll be probably wear and tear will be worse when, after 3 years, say for example. So let's say for example I'm there 3 years, I'm conscious that there's a few little bits and bobs need doing. I get a man in, all the little bits and bobs are doing, and I think I've covered the place pretty much as I when I moved in. But now I've had a letter and they've reduced it by £200 for a little nick here, a little nick there. Where do I stand on that?
So the starting point is the schedule of condition when you moved in. So effectively they do a move-in report or various terminology that would effectively mean the same thing. Some form of written report backed by either video or photographs, and that's really, really key to have some pictures to represent what the property was like when you moved in. And the key thing is that to have a look at that report either before you move in or immediately upon moving in. So you and your partner go through that report in printed form or on a tablet, and walk through each room, look at the passageway, look at the bathroom, the kitchen, the lounge, the bedroom, all of those areas, and look at that report and see if there's anything else that you identify as being a problem, so that you can annotate that report or send a communication immediately across to the landlord and or the agents to say that we've received the report, but these are some discrepancies. So that's always key. Now, when it comes to exit and you leaving the property, the reference point is always going to be the initial document and the pictures in relation to that property when you moved in. So that would be compared against the new report that they would generate upon your exit. So ordinarily, the company that deals with a tenant leaving also should have reference to that initial report, so that they can compare that and go through items that they feel are wear and tear against items that are have been repaired or poorly repaired or are in need of repair. So that would be the comparison between the two.
And where does the landlord where does the estate agent fit in?
So
in terms of the liability, because some of my experiences, as a landlord and as a tenant, is that I'm dealing with the tenant direct, or the tenant's dealing with the estate agent direct, and they have no control or contact with the landlord, who's often overseas. If the estate agent gives you 5 or 6 express promises as to the state of the property, or they've misled you, why sue the landlord? Why not sue the estate agent?
So the contract itself would have the contracting party, the landlord. So under the Landlord and Tenant Act, when you have an assured short-hold tenancy agreement, for example here, you have to identify who the landlord is of that property. And the contract is between the landlord and the agent, landlord and the tenant, and the agent is merely a facilitator, and he may be doing the day-to-day, for example, the maintenance of the property, collecting the rent, collecting ground rent, and then notifying the landlord or accounting to the landlord with regards to that. So
if there's a dispute.
So if there's a dispute, you would raise the dispute and the correspondence with the agent, but you would also copy in the landlord. And if it came to a point where you needed to issue proceedings, you would issue proceedings against the landlord and then add the agent as another defendant. And under the civil procedure rules, there's specific areas that deal with that, and there are areas 9, 10, 11 and 15 that deal with that aspect of it, of adding in another third party as a defendant to proceedings.
Would you say it is too early to litigate against both immediately? So you don't litigate against the estate agent and the landlord immediately, just issue a claim against the landlord and then allow for the landlord to bring in the estate agent?
It's a good question. I think, I mean, obviously following the civil procedure rules and the protocols, you would send a letter before action and you'd copy both of them in. I think at the point of issuing proceedings, I would advise you issue against both. It depends on the circumstances, but I'd say both right at the outset, and allow them to then apportion what element of blame, if any, between them. But you would only really do that if it was an agent that was actively involved in the management and control of the property. So for example, as a landlord, you may engage an agent just to do what they call a tenant find service, whereby they just advertise the property, find a tenant, do a reference check on the tenant, and then provide all of that information over to the landlord and say, over to you. So that's one aspect of it, all the way through to just collecting rent on behalf of the landlord, or even guaranteeing the rent to a landlord, and or dealing with all the sort of maintenance and support that the landlord would require with regards to a property. So that would really be down to them. But as a tenant, you wouldn't really want to be involved. You'd say, well, look, I'm renting a property. I've got a tenancy agreement. This is the landlord. This is the agent. The agent sends around someone to deal with maintenance and repair for on behalf of the landlord. My shower's still not working. These are the other underlying issues, and I want recompense. And they've refused to put things right within a timely manner or to a satisfactory standard. So I'm going to issue a claim against the landlord and the agent and let them scrap it out, so to speak, in court, and let the court decide on who's liable and what proportion of liability, if any, is to be divided between them two.
Moving on to properties that are known as MHO.
HMO.
HMO.
Yeah.
What did I say?
MHO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what concerns would a landlord have on the legal aspects of that? Anything that jumps to mind on issues regarding individual rooms in a block of in a block?
Well, immediate thing, that the landlord has got registration as a HMO if it falls within the category of that with the local authority. That'd be the number one thing.
And that is by law, they must do that.
They must do that, and they must maintain that as well. So in order to meet the standard, there's a lot of legislation that they need to comply with, from simple things like having fire doors to having smoke alarms that are interlinked or interconnected. So if you're on the ground floor and a smoke alarm goes off, it should connect automatically with the one on the first floor and the second floor, so everyone in the building gets notification that the smoke alarm's going off, and it's not just a faint sound in the background. You think, oh, it's not us, it's probably next door or something. And then the likes of having carbon monoxide alarm close to where the boiler area is, and or in any living space, fire exits, fire panels or fire alarms if the property is deemed to fall within the category for them to have that.
Are they becoming more popular, in terms of an investment?
It's difficult to say with regards to them coming into play with regards to investments. Just sort of looking at the legislation in the round, I think it's a very positive thing, because it means that, you know, if you've got safety in a property, so you've got a fire blanket or a fire extinguisher in a kitchen, you've got fire doors on all the main doors, you've got smoke alarms, all of that is brilliant because it helps protect lives and it gives you that sort of first response as to an alert. So I think it's very, very positive, and I think it's something that, you know, we ought to introduce in our own homes. But the thought of having, you know, if you were to discuss it with your wife or your partner, you've got a lovely kitchen, and then what's that red thing in the corner? Oh, that's a fire blanket, yeah, in case we ever have a fire. They'll say, well, can you take that down and put that away straight away?
It's not very aesthetic, is it?
Yeah, so I think, but you know, the safety aspect of it is key, and it's legislation that, you know, is really welcomed by tenants, and landlords ought to embrace it as well, purely just thinking of the safety aspects of it, and having that on their conscience that, you know, I've got a property and it meets all the regulations and requirements, and it's good for tenants and their safe and their well-being.
Okay. Thank you, Izaz. Great to speak to you again soon.
Take care.
Bye, everybody. Bye.